Welcome to the Free Cities Podcast. My name is Timothy Allen, and this is the official podcast of the Free Cities Foundation. Hello, and welcome to this episode number 88 of the Free Cities Podcast. Well, warm greetings from here in sunny Cornwall. I'm currently taking a little break down in the southwest of the UK with my family. And I have to say, it's very hard to ignore the instantaneous benefits that you can get from being able to just wake up, grab a board and walk for 10 minutes down to the beach to find glassy 2-foot barrels rolling into our local sandy beach. Well, the mediocre surfers amongst you will understand this. We're very easy to please, and as far as I'm concerned, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. I think that I've decided 100% this trip, if I ever do retire, it'll hopefully be within a stone's throw of a right-handed beach break, just like the one I'm sat next to now. Anyway, no chance of retiring in the near future. I've got too much excellent new interview content for you coming up over the next couple of months, starting with this one, which is another discussion I recorded on our recent fact-finding mission to Lieberland. Thomas Walls is Lieberland's Minister of Foreign Affairs, and I caught up with him at ARC, which is the so-called Lieberland village, located just over the border from Lieberland's disputed territory in Serbia. Now, if you're new to the whole Lieberland story, then I would say that this interview is one to be listened to in conjunction with two other Lieberland podcasts that I've recorded recently. One was with the president, Vit Jelička. That was number 58, if you look back in the history of this podcast. And the other was just a few weeks ago with my Free Cities Foundation colleague, Hinek Fentzel. That was episode 82, and that was me and him discussing what we discovered on our trip to Lieberland. In this episode, I'm actually probing a little deeper into the project, searching for more information about the government and how it works, plus updates on some of the recent diplomatic and political events that are currently shaping the future of Lieberland. Thomas also gave me his predictions for the timeline going forward, and we discuss what we think might be the best strategies to see the brightest future for the project. Don't forget that representatives from Lieberland will be speaking at Liberty in Our Lifetime, which is our conference held in Prague later on this year, along with all the other prominent Free Cities projects from across the globe. Tickets available right now, as always, at libertyinourlifetime.org. And before I leave you, as I glance through the window in front of me, spying yet another gnarly set building on the horizon, there's no need for you to get up. I'll deal with that one in a moment after I leave you. You should probably just sit back, relax, and enjoy my conversation with Thomas Walls. Journalists, don't worry.
Yeah, thank God.
I'm here to. We're on a fact-finding mission.
So what you're saying is that.
No, yes, yeah. I love that interview.
Yeah.
It's literally a piece of educatory material. That interview, isn't it? I mean, it is phenomenal. I come from that background. I worked. Do you remember a newspaper? Well, it's now online. There's a newspaper called The Independent in London.
Sure.
Yeah, I worked there for 7 years, and we thought we were quite radical because we were different. You know, but actually, it's horrendous when I look back now. They were the same. You know,
I enjoyed reading articles from The Independent sometimes, but yeah.
I was a photographer.
Okay.
We had an extremely well-respected photography department, and we were still shooting black and white. Yeah, it's a hellhole now. I look at it every now and then. It's really bad. Really has no value almost.
That industry is a poor shell of what it once was. And even back in the day, there was, you know, agenda and bias, but now they've dropped the mask, you know.
Which is better.
Yeah.
I don't mind a news organization having an agenda. I don't mind that at all. And it's the more overt, the better, because then you can sort of like take it with a grain of salt.
And you can sort out which ones. Okay, today they actually reported on a good story and I got some information from that that's useful.
The issue I have with the old legacy media is the format. It's horrendous. It's short, paragraphs, sub-edited with a sort of headline. And you never really get the meat and bones of what you're trying to find out anyway. So it really doesn't work. And it never worked, I don't think. I think, but it certainly doesn't work now. And this is why podcasts are much bigger than any legacy media are.
And it's surprising how the long format podcasts have been so successful, like Rogan and Lex Friedman and many other ones.
And who would have thought?
Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, really, people didn't think that people would want to sit and listen to someone for 2 hours or 3 hours, maybe. But it's true, actually. They do. The old legacy media underestimated humans, because otherwise this wouldn't be happening now. People do want to find a specialist on something and hear it from the horse's mouth for 2 hours. They don't want a sub-editor who doesn't really understand the story, just making something into a paragraph.
And more often than not nowadays, the headline will lead you astray from what the actual article says or the facts in the article. It will actually try to drive home a predetermined outcome or conclusion. So all you need to do is look at the headline and say, oh, that's what happened today. But it actually isn't what happened.
I take it you get that a lot with Lieberland.
Yeah, we do. We do, especially in the legacy media. Actually, the other day, they interviewed Tom Hanks for CNN. Interviewed Tom Hanks at the National Cemetery, which is the military cemetery, on the anniversary of D-Day. Of course, Hanks was involved in Band of Brothers and Saving Private Ryan and stuff like that. And they asked him about the significance of it. What's, you know, democracy versus fascism? He didn't even mention Donald Trump, but the headline was, Tom Hanks fears that the return of Trump could be, you know, linked to fascism or something like that. He didn't say anything of the sort. And it was like, very nice interview. He's actually very, very well educated on the subject, having made several motion pictures about it. And the headline had nothing to do with the substance of the interview. And it didn't even have a connection with anything he said.
Mm. Well, also now the incentives, because the industry is slowly, it is dead pretty much, but it's still slowly dying. The incentive model is now we've got to get as much money as we can in the shortest and easiest way possible. So a bad headline will bring in the clicks, but the whole thing is just rancid. It's so bad. And I come from that world. So I really do look back and shiver when I see what it is.
And you do have to kind of chuckle when you see, a BuzzFeed or some news outlet announces layoffs. It's like, okay, what did these guys do in the first place? You know, it's sad when anyone loses their job. But if the model is predicated on, okay, we're just going to churn out a bunch of stuff and we can have AI do that or something. So bye, guys, you know.
Yeah. What you will. Okay, let me ask you first. Is it right? You're the Ministry of Foreign Affairs.
Minister of Foreign Affairs, yes.
Minister of Foreign Affairs at Lieberland. Can you give me a quick, there's two things I want to start with. One is where we are, what this is, and what's the difference between this and Lieberbase? Because we've come from Lieberbase as well. We've been there for a week. And secondly, can you describe the government of Lieberland? So maybe start with the first one, where we are now.
Okay, well, welcome you guys. We are in Arc Lieberland Village, which is just outside of Apatin, Serbia, on the beautiful Danube River. It's a couple of hectare property with a beautiful lake. We have about 15 cabins. We're working on some more. You can enjoy beautiful nature here. It's managed by the Lieberland Group. And that we're a legal entity here in Serbia, and we just got registered as an official accommodation. So we're like a hotel now here, and we have events for locals here on the weekends. During the week, you can have parties here, concerts, weddings, all sorts of events. I'm involved in that somewhat, and a lot of them are Liberland related, Liberland themed. The purpose of ARC is to show the world what we want Liberland to look like, in one way or another. I mean, you know, this is one area of this region, the Danube region, which is very, very beautiful, and it's beautiful nature here. And Liberland is very similar to that. And our initial settlement in Liberland did have this kind of feel, this kind of character of this, you know, riverine. It's called the Amazon of Europe, so there's a reason for that. So what we're doing here at ARC, we have festivals here. So it's the base for many Liberland events, such as our anniversary, which is every April, a couple days in the middle of April, Floating Man Festival, which is in August. That's sort of a summer festival. You've heard of Burning Man in the desert. This is Floating Man on the river. So we take people out in boats and everything. So you're certainly welcome to come to that. There we have another interesting event called Liberpulco, which will also be here. We're in sort of in conjunction with the guys from, or the people from Anarchapulco, which is held in Acapulco, Mexico every year. We're going to do a joint event here in September with them.
And it's probably worth mentioning, we're not opposite to Liberland here on the other side of the river, are we? We're a little bit further down.
Liberland is a few clicks north of here on the other side. On a large scale, yeah, we're pretty close, and it's across the river, but it's up north a few clicks. It's about an hour in the boat.
Okay, and was it originally the idea that possibly this might serve as a good base to sort of go to and from Liberland?
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I take it that hasn't panned out because the river is pretty heavily policed by the looks of it. Is that right?
Yeah. You couldn't, in past years, we could go leave from here and sail right by Liberland and look at it, but the police would be right there on the coast. The border police also have, vessels on the Danube River, and they patrol that pretty heavily. So you would have to go check in somewhere in Croatia at a port with the port authority or the harbor master and say, look, I'm arriving in Croatia, here's my passport, and then enter Croatia. That's how you do it now. But then you have to go to either, you know, a town that's fairly far away. So the one way to get through Croatia, as you guys know, is to go to Zmajevac and then go there by car, by bike, by foot.
Right. Now, Zmajevac is another of your Liberland properties, right? Liber base is over there. Mm-hmm. This, I should say, is kind of like a hotel, I suppose, like a resort. Formerly a resort, as a small resort, this place.
This place? Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Whereas over on the other side, in Croatia, Liber base is a large residential, agricultural building.
Yeah. It's a place that some of our people bought on their own several months ago, and they're working hard on it's a big job, but they're working hard on restoring it.
They bought that with their own money, didn't they? Is that right?
Yeah, it's not a state-owned property at all, although it's functions for Liberlanders. I mean, if you're coming to Liberland, you can stay at Liber Base and help out, but it was purchased by some of our own people.
That's interesting. I didn't know that. So how does it work between you and them then? I mean, obviously, like there is a government here. You're in it.
Yes.
How does it work? I mean, I'm trying to imagine how that would work with another kind of government.
And actually, it's an interesting case. We discussed different arrangements with them, but they still own it, and we don't have a stake in it. We discussed, what if we had a stake in it? How would that look? You know, we did, you know, go over those things and see how that would play out, but. Currently, they're still the owners of it.
Why wouldn't you, as the government, take a property over there?
We don't want the government to own too much property, so we encourage individuals to acquire some. And some other people have acquired other properties over there in Croatia. There's Dom Dragana, which is another little house over there. There's, at least two or three other people among us have properties over there in Batina, in Zmajevac, in that general region. It's a nice region.
It is. It is. It's lovely. And what about financing Liber Base and things like that? Does the government over here fund that, or is that up to individuals as well?
Yeah, it's mostly up to individuals. We like to rely on private initiative. Sometimes we try to coordinate efforts. Okay, let's do this then. We'll send some bikes over. We'll send some equipment over. And then you guys use it to go to Liberal Land. So we try to support it as much as we feasibly can. And we'd love to make it self-supporting. Of course, that's in line with our philosophy. But we realize that, you know, sometimes some coordination is in order. And when visitors come, that's a convenient place for people to use it as a way station going on the way to Liberal Land.
So. Okay. So tell me about the government of Liberal Land.
Sure.
And what is it? Where is it based? And who is it?
Right now, we are run by the provisional government, which consists of Vit Yedlicka, the president, Vice President Bogi Wozniak, who's in Chicago, Secretary of State Tariq Abbasi, who's in London. I'm Minister of Foreign Affairs Thomas Walls. I'm from the United States, from Florida. I've been coming over here since August when the border opened. I only planned on coming over for like 3 weeks for Floating Man last year. And then the border opened on August 6th, 2023, and decided to stay.
We
have some more government members, but go ahead.
I was going to say, you better explain what the border opening in August was about.
Sure. I'll get to that. Let's see. We also have Navid Sabarin from Luxembourg. He's our Minister of Finance. We have a Minister of Justice, Michal Ptacnik, who's a Czech. He's living in the Netherlands, though. We have senators. We have Congress as well, and we'll have our first official congressional elections coming up in a few months. Okay, back to the other question, which was
August,
the opening of the border.
Yes.
Of course, in August, we have our Floating Man Festival here. I had planned to come over for 3 weeks, tour around Europe after Floating Man. And all of a sudden, the border opened. Now, earlier that year, last year, Jan Urban, one of our first settler, actually, went over to Liberal Land in January, right after Croatia joined the Schengen zone and the Eurozone. And he was able to stay in Liberal Land for almost a month without being messed with by the police. At the end of about 25 days, the police came to him and said, well, you're going to get hypothermia over here, and we're going to take you out for your own good. So they rescued him, in quotes, air quotes, and took him out of Liberal Land and took him to the hospital over there. But he was fine. You know, he knows how to camp in the wilderness and, you know, inclement weather and stuff like that. So he was our first settler for 25 days. And actually later, Jan was very instrumental in working with the settlement, working on the Liberty boat, which was stationed right off the shore there in Croatia, right at the edge of Liberal Land. Jan actually integrated pretty well over there in Croatia. He joined the soccer team or the football team over in Batina, was playing with them. Some of the cops recognized him. Hey, you play soccer with my son, you know. But he was pretty friendly. He learned the language pretty easily made friends with people very easily and was able to coordinate, communicate, great team player, and they banned him. Croatians banned him for 5 years from Croatia for being, I forgot what the reasoning was. You know, it's these vague things they come up with, these trumped up charges.
Probably something to do with camping, fires. Something
yeah, like. I think it was a little higher, elevated a little higher, like maybe with allusions to national security.
Oh, that's right. I remember now it was something to do with terrorism, right?
No, well, I mean, maybe some...
As in, like, it wasn't actually terrorism.
Yeah, threat to national security, which, right. You know, is they would have a secret file. The Croatian intelligence has a secret file on people, and you're not allowed to see it. And so you can't prepare any defense against any such...
I suspect I have one myself now,
oh.
Having been ejected from Croatia today.
Yeah, I don't know if they went to the trouble of creating... Well, there's information about you, for sure.
There's a lot of paperwork, that's for sure. A lot of typed-out paperwork.
Yeah, they love to put their bureaucracy to work.
Yes.
A few other people, Navid, our finance minister, sadly also got a five-year ban. He didn't do anything, of course. They knew he was one of the leaders, so they singled him out. And one day when he was crossing the border, after a couple months of crossing the border with no problem. He was taken to the station and very unceremoniously, I wouldn't say mistreated on the level that they treat some people that cross the border, or the southern border, but he was given a 5-year ban.
When you talk about the border, you're talking about the border from Croatia to Liberland, right?
Croatia to Serbia.
Oh, Croatia to Serbia,
because
right.
A lot of people, EU citizens, Schengen zone citizens, would cross the border at Batina, where you guys probably crossed. And, of course, they give you the business there. They shake you down. They search your car. They, look for something to nail you on.
So what's the border opening in August thing you were talking about?
Okay. Of course, there's a border between Liberland and Croatia. And August 6th, some of us had been just walking into Liberland from the river, from the boat, on the Croatian side. They were already in Croatia, so they didn't come from Serbia. So there was none of that business going on, none of that problematics. They were already in Croatia on the Liberty boat, which we had there. It's like a two-deck ship that we have. It's under repairs right now, but it was very instrumental in the first settlement. They would just walk in. This is after Jan Urban did his month stay. They would just walk into Liberland, and they would send pictures and geolocation and GPS from the map. It's like, oh, my God, they're already in there. It's so exciting. And on August 6th, the cops just showed up and said, okay, just let me see your passport. Okay, go in. And I went in the first week, the first day. I was here, and I drove a Mercedes Sprinter van over full of equipment and supplies. And we went over there on Saturday, August 6th, and it was an amazing day. It was a dream come true to be able to walk in to Liberland. You show the Croatian border police your passport, and they let you in.
So was that them acknowledging then that this was a border?
Yeah.
Officially?
Well, we put up a sign that said official border crossing, Liberland, Croatia, and they took it down when we weren't looking. We weren't looking, and it was gone. They did not like that.
But, I mean, it is interesting, this side of it, because having just spent a week over there, it's very easy to conclude that they are signaling that it's not theirs.
Mm-hmm.
And you see that because when you're in the Croatia side, when you're actually in Croatia for real, there's look at your passport, let me see this, let me do that. The police are on your tail the whole time. And inside Liberland, we just had a kindly hello.
Mm-hmm.
And where are you going? And then, but none of the checking of passports, none of this, that, and the other. And that was the general impression that I got, albeit in a short period of time. So is that your, I mean, what is the current official situation about Liberland and about Croatia?
They're from the Croatian side, it's kind of vague. We're making overtures to say, look, we want to work together with you guys. We don't need any tensions between our people and your people. Outside Liberland, however, they're pulling over our cars, doing technical inspections, that kind of stuff to make things difficult. Wouldn't it be a shame if your taillight was busted and you would need to take your car to the shop and get it fixed, and we'd give you a ticket for it? Wouldn't that be a shame? So outside of Liberland, yeah, they do exercise a little more. They put a little more heat on us, so to speak. In Liberland, yeah, they've initially they came with like inspectors, like building inspectors, things like that, and gave us tickets, and we took those to court. And the first dozen, including one yesterday, they've been dropped because, where do we get a permit to do X or Y in Liberland? It's not part of any municipality in Croatia. So where would we apply? There's no authority that would, even if it were applicable, there's no one to say yes or no.
So the official line on that piece of land is what from the Croatian government?
It is yet to be determined.
Right.
Yeah.
That's it.
They said the future status of it is yet to be determined. No third party has a right to claim it. It's subject to future negotiation.
Right, but that's obviously them saying it.
Yes.
Anyone could say that.
Yeah.
They? Like Serbia could say, well, it might be worth mentioning the interesting thing that might happen in the future is Croatia and Serbia are both trying to claim the sort of lion's share of this unsettled land, not even Liberland. Mm-hmm. No one's actually trying to claim Liberland. They're trying to claim the land on the Serbian side, which is contested.
Yeah.
But I would imagine if Croatia lost that kind of that land, they would then want Liberland, wouldn't they?
Probably. Yeah. Because there are three or four large pockets of land here on this side of the river, which still show on the map as Croatian territory. When you fly over it in a small plane, the pilot will avoid that airspace because, it's considered Croatian airspace. Well, then why isn't Liberland considered Serbian airspace? And why can't we fly over that? It's very large areas here. They're very beautiful nature preserves here. The Gornja Podunavlja Nature Preserve is very close to here. I've ridden through there quite a bit. It's supposed to be Croatian. It's maintained more or less by the forestry authority here on the Serbian side. And I don't know what the funding of that is, but they're the ones who, you know, make sure there's no trash left there. Or you can bike through it. You can ride a little scooter through it. You can horseback ride through it, or you can hike it.
And what are the Serbian, just the border police like around on this side of the river?
They're very professional.
Do they do anything? I mean, do they consider the river to be the border?
They want the river to be the border. That is official Serbian policy, that the river should be the border.
Right.
And our interactions with the Serbian authorities have been positive and very orderly and very friendly.
Right.
So we haven't had the problems we've had like on the Croatian side, unfortunately. We'd love to be friends with everyone.
I suspect that's because when you look at it, they have a better case for the land, don't they? Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact that the river is the border makes total sense to almost everyone, probably, mm-hmm. except Croatia, because then they end up losing some land.
Yeah, 10 times the amount of Liberland's area is on this side that Croatia claims. So they'd be gone. There's part right on the Hungarian border. There's two pockets south of that, and there's a few other here and there. Actually, there was another small nation project down the river a little bit called Virtus. And when I first heard about that in the news, there were some news stories about it. I said, somebody in their, in their bedroom saying, I'm a new country. But they actually went there. There's another pocket a little farther south, a guy named Daniel Jackson. He's from the UK or Australia. Went there, along with a couple Croatians and a few other people. And the Croatians harassed them and kicked them out of Croatia as well.
Is that on their side, on the Croatia side?
Or yeah. Right. Similar situation to Liberland, smaller piece of land, a little further down the river.
It's interesting.
Same reasoning, same paperwork, illegal camping, et cetera. And they got, 7 days to leave Croatia, 90-day ban or the 30-day ban, something like that.
Something else that occurred to me during my many interactions with the police over there was that there's another element to this side of the story, which is the local people that work in the forestry commission mm-hmm. people, or the people that work in forestry.
Schumer, right.
Right. Who seem to be kind of able to do a little bit more unofficially. I think things go missing quite a bit. And
yes.
Yeah, right.
Thank you for mentioning that. There's been at least three raids on our settlement there, and the raids have been carried out by the Šuma. Hrvatska Šuma is Croatian state forestry organization. It's under the Ministry of Agriculture. So it's a state-owned company that manages forests located on the territory of Croatia. For the last couple of years, they've been harvesting resources in Liberland, Gornja Siga, and they continue to do that. So when it came to our settlement, they came in with the police by their side in coordination with the police, and they took all of our stuff. They destroyed our buildings. They hauled all of our stuff to a property yard they have in Croatia. We've requested it back. Just yesterday, we sent a letter via DHL to their headquarters in Zagreb asking for the return of the property. I sent a letter to their office in Osijek, which is a big city fairly close to Liberland, where they have an office as well, asking for the return of the property. Yeah, they've just come in very, like, basically like thugs. And we've also complained to the ombudsman's office in Croatia. The ombudsman's office is charged with overseeing government agencies, and if they act in any irregular or unprofessional or negative ways, they're empowered to investigate them. So we filed a complaint with them too. And of course, there's legal cases that we have. We've hired some Croatian lawyers to pursue justice in these cases we have against them.
One thing that actually occurred to me when I was thinking about that, I didn't realize they were state-owned, but I wondered whether there wasn't a personal connection with this piece of land with a number of them.
There could be. I don't want to comment on that. They do have activity in the area. They probably benefit quite a bit. I wouldn't doubt if there was some personal advantage that some of them get. I don't know.
Or even, I mean, just a family tradition going back.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking about how this whole thing would move forward. And I look at the government and I think the government have got their reasons and I can see them quite obviously. But then these guys that work there, maybe some of them live in some of those houses close by and they've been hanging around on that land for four generations. I don't know. Maybe
There is a Shuma office, not office, but place where some of them stay, right on the edge, on the western edge. Maybe they have. And we'd love to work with them. I mean, we don't want to be at odds with those guys. You know, there's some of them are probably pretty good guys, you know. And I think if we were on the same side of things, if we could see things from, we want to understand them. But they don't talk to us. You know, they didn't respond to our previous communication. Every time we try to talk to them when they're there, you know, it's just like very gruff and very, you know. I wish we could talk to them. Maybe it takes someone going there on a higher level and saying, look, let's make a deal. You know, we'll give you guys some money and help you. You know, if you want to manage the forest here, maybe we could work out an agreement where we pay you to manage the forest and you'll benefit from that. And you guys can come here anytime you want. Just don't take a chainsaw to our little hut that we built last week. You know,
yeah, it was
and steal our bikes.
It was the one thing where I thought that when you get a personal connection like that, it's much. I don't feel as easy about it when you've got a completely piece of wasteland that no one wants. It's very. It seems there is a moral obligation to settle it if you want and make something of it. But if it's something that's been managed and looked after and stuff, it's just not really visited much, then I mean, I don't know if this is true. Like I say, I didn't realize it was state-owned because, mm-hmm. for starters, the company, presumably they ship people in from all around Croatia to go and work there. That would imply that. But yeah, it was one of the one things that I thought, I wonder if anyone's getting ousted from here because Liberland's there, you know.
Yeah. There's probably some complications that we don't fully grasp. I would love to do that. If I went to Croatia, I'd probably be banned. They know who I am.
Yeah.
At first, they didn't know who
when
I was.
When did you last go into Liberland?
In August, in September. When I saw non-EU people being banned, I thought, well, they'll probably do that to me too, so I'll just come over here and work from here, work from Czech Republic. You know, so I just don't want to have those complications. You know, what if I don't want my travel to be restricted in any way because I wanted to go to Liberland and the Croatians said, okay, well, we'll put a flag on his travel record. So
can you talk a little bit about what happened when the buildings were destroyed? Because of the flooding at the moment, we saw what is left of Jefferson Square.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't see the beach because it was underwater. But I understand that there was some building work that went on there. Can you describe those two places and then tell us what happened?
There were two settlements, basically. And there's other places where people were building. First one was Jefferson Square. When we went in the first couple of days, we thought, well, where's a place we could set up a base camp? And here's sort of a junction of these roads. There's sort of primitive roads there, which are fine. And it's sort of on a little hill. And it turned out to be the place where the old hunting lodge was. And the one in the picture of Liberland, which we always used with the flag in front of it, that had been demolished in 2017, 2018. And we discovered that building there totally by coincidence. Wow, the place where he decided to set up base camp was where this old hunting lodge was. And oddly enough, the basement was still intact, even though the building had been demolished a few years ago. So we thought, okay, well, we can use the basement to store stuff in. We can rebuild, start rebuilding. We'll collect all the bricks that are strewn about. And we started rebuilding that and fixing up the basement. And one of the raids conducted by the forestry department took all our stuff in the basement, equipment and gear and some pretty expensive stuff, a couple hundred thousand euros worth of stuff altogether when you add it all up, which we have, and we have the receipts for it. Anyway, we've been going back there to Jefferson Square. So that's one of our settlements. On Liberty Island, which is interesting, they didn't mess with us there. We did have a couple structures. We thought, well, this area does flood. So look, what can we make that sort of, you know, if it gets washed away, no big deal. We made it three structures out of sandbags, and they worked pretty good. And we had a really good crew there, and they lasted part of the winter. And the spirits were very high in spite of the weather conditions, things like that. And the Croatians really didn't mess with us there. One, because it's hard to get vehicles there to haul stuff away. Two, they kind of really know that's not theirs. It's still on part of it's still on Serbian cadastral maps. Otherwise, Serbia has renounced a claim to the area, but that's still actually on Serbian maps. The settlement went pretty well, and then the water started rising. It kept rising, and it kept rising. We were looking at the forecast for the level of the Danube, so many meters higher, and we had to evacuate Liberty Island. So we evacuated everything back to Jefferson Square, back to the marina, and it was inundated, completely inundated with water, and those buildings we built were swept away.
What about the wooden buildings that were demolished?
That was at the marina, one of the marinas, and that was in September. That happened on September 20th, 21st, and 22nd. About 50 police officers came in and a crew of Shuma workers, the forestry workers, and the police separated everybody from the buildings and their belongings, and they said, "You have 2 minutes to get, just vacate." And they started bringing in the tractors and the guys with the chainsaws, and they were having a great old time, and they were mocking our people, and that was just an ugly scene. And they weren't, one or two people got arrested. I mean, they weren't kicked out, but our stuff was removed and destroyed. And the pretense was, well, we're removing trash from the forest. And these things were obviously things that were being used, personal equipment, personal gear. That's not trash. And they sort of, use that excuse to take everything away.
Can you describe what the buildings were like? I don't have any idea.
We had a mess hall. We had a kitchen with a refrigerator, stove, generator. We had one that we just, built for people to sleep in. Very well built, small wooden houses.
Planks of
wood. Yeah, but very well done. We had some people who had some pretty good carpentry skills over there, and all that work was very disappointing to see that happen. And some people, our people, were very discouraged by that.
And what about what's going on now?
They haven't touched our brick structures yet. It's hard to argue that a brick structure is trash, and we are rebuilding the foundation of the hunting lodge. Now, if you look at Croatian forestry law, and we've taken a look at that, it specifically allows for certain kind of structures in the forest. And assuming this were a Croatian forest, which it's not, it does allow for one, monuments, certain kinds of monuments to the war, to the victims of the war. It allows for structures like hunting lodge, which it was before that building, that was a hunting lodge before. So we're basically rebuilding the hunting lodge, and that's not in conflict with Croatian. It was actually a Serbian hunting lodge. It was registered to a Serbian hunting society that went over there in years past and used it as a place for oh, let's stay here in the lodge while we're hunting deer or boar or something like that.
What you're describing there is very intricately connected with the big problem that I see here, which is because this is all undisputed, you don't know which way to kind of deal with it. So like you're mentioning, yeah, according to Croatian law, blah, blah, blah. But actually, it's not Croatia. So what I want to know is, and I've got my own ideas on this, but having spent some time here now, is like, how do you move forward from here? Like, what's the plan to sort of make this come into fruition? You know?
Well, we've got some strategies that involve a legal approach, court cases, things like that. We've shown in about a dozen cases already that they have no standing when they bring charges against us. Well, the inspector comes, well, you built this without a permit. Well, who do we get? Those have been a lot of those have been thrown out because one, there was no evidence presented. Two, the inspectors didn't even show up to the court appearance. So the legal aspect is one, and we also have legal cases challenging the bans of people. You know, so-and-so is banned for X amount of time. Well, on what basis? We're challenging that. We have to take it to a higher level. We have to take it to a higher court. You know, the justice system in Croatia is a bit slow. So in some cases, we'll have to wait till it goes to the higher court. We can appeal if they release a verdict that's not in our favor, we can appeal it to a higher court. And of course, that takes time. We've complained, like I said, we complained to the ombudsman's office about these irregularities and what they're doing. That takes time as well, and we haven't heard back from them yet. We need to increase awareness about the situation. We need to take it to a higher court level, too. We've been speaking with various attorneys on seeing if we can file a case with the European Court of Human Rights, the ECHR, because they're doing a number of things which violate people's rights, for sure.
But what about the actual... the actual process of settling a piece of land? Like, is there any legality minefields around this part of it? I mean, I can understand trying to point out the idiosyncrasies in what the government is mm-hmm. doing in Croatia. But what about the actual act of claiming this piece of land? You know?
Well, new countries form, you know, fairly frequently. After Yugoslavia broke up, you had several new countries. And what's key here is international engagement. Of course, the EU and the UK were instrumental in helping the former Yugoslav republics become independent countries. Like they helped, like for example, when Slovenia and Croatia declared their independence from Yugoslavia, the Europeans helped them quite a bit. And because they took an active role in promoting democracy and making sure they transitioned from state-owned everything to a more market-oriented economy. And they got quite a bit of help from the Europeans and other countries, too, United States as well. It's international engagement, and we need to engage more on that level. It's a little difficult when you're dealing with these supranational organizations like the EU, like European Commission, things like that. But we're slowly making friends here and there. Of course, they just recently had elections for the European Parliament. There might be some new members of the European Parliament who might be more friendly to our case. Basically, it's a political decision. Of course, we feel we fulfill the criteria of being a state. We have a government. We have a territory. We have the ability to engage in relations with other countries. These criteria that normally a state fulfills. Now, it's interesting, Croatia in some of the documents referred to Liberland as a parastate. A parastate is something that is not fully recognized, but it fulfills the functions that a state would. It has a structure, it has, you know, methods of decision making, etc. So at least they're not, initially they said we were a joke. Now they're at least saying we're a parastate, you know, kind of like a paramilitary, is kind of like sort of a military, but not totally official. You know, they might have unofficial uniforms and weapons and stuff and participate in military action, but they're not the official, like, you know, here I can think of some worse examples, but we don't have a military, you know, at all.
Fortunately.
Yeah, exactly. We're peaceful people.
So do you see a trend then? You were talking about the first, you almost describe first they laugh at you. What is it?
How does first it they laugh at you.
Then they, whatever.
Then they fight you and then you win.
Right. Whatever.
I'm missing a few steps there.
Yeah. What stage are we at?
First they ignore you.
Right.
What's that? Yeah.
First they ignore you. Yeah. Then they laugh at you.
Yeah.
Then they fight you. Then you win. Is there four? So yeah. Where are we at now with Liberland? Have they ignored you already in the beginning? Or they went straight to you?
It's between making fun and fighting. Yeah. They still kind of dismiss us as, well, it's just some excited adventurers, you know, that you know.
Do you want to hear something interesting?
Yeah.
In the police station, there was a lovely lady, police lady called, I think her name was Daniela, if I remember, spoke good English. So she became my kind of translator. And I was asking them questions, you know, like, why do you care so much? Why, you know, obviously at the end of the day, most of them were following orders. But I did get to say, look, which out of you think, what do you think is going to happen? And I said, because my feeling is, having now spent some time, is in the end, it will become Liberland. And all I got was silence and a couple of nods. Mm-hmm. No one stood up and said no. Interestingly, I don't know whether that's relevant here, but because that was my sense, like having only heard about Liberland from afar, coming to see it made me realize that it's a terribly difficult thing to do, but that it is possible. Mm-hmm. And I saw that and I acknowledged, this is possible. All that matters is how strong is the conviction to keep Liberland or to keep that area to Croatia, or how strong is the conviction to not, basically, by you guys. And that's all it is. And it might last.
It's a contest of wills.
50 years or something.
It's a contest of wills. One thing we have to offer, that we have a unique selling point. We offer freedom to people. And Croatia has sort of, you know, it's a Western country, in quotes. And, you know, it's a nice country. I like Croatia quite a bit. And we want to be allies with Croatia, and we could work together. But we have something special that we offer. So I think that alone will survive any temporary or short-term conflict we have. And back to the question of the police officers, the law enforcement, I met, you know, a number of them. Some of them are really, really good people, and they want peace. And some of them asked, you know, hey, maybe we could work for you guys when you get things rolling. They get paid more, that's for sure.
Well, they are all just following orders. I know that.
Yeah.
And even at Jefferson Square, they're coming about three times a day at the moment. And what happens? Yeah, it goes something like this: police roll into the square, in inverted commas. Oh, you can't have a fire. Okay, thanks. Oh, and you can't have a tent. Oh, okay, thanks. Bye. There's no enforcement there, right. But they are obviously being instructed to keep a record of what they're doing. And because I assume everyone imagines that one day there's going to be this kind of like big court case or something, and everyone's going to draw on all this information they've been keeping and et cetera, et cetera. And that's when you know whether or not this thing goes ahead.
When I was there, they told us the same thing. And so I slept on a cot under a tarp with a rope between the trees. So we, you know, we tried to, okay, no tent. Okay, this is technically not a tent. So they're like, okay. And we had like a little mess tent with mosquito netting. And that was where we met with them. They would come and check our passports at the table, have a coffee together. You know, we had some good relations with them, and sometimes from the reports that I'm getting, we still do, and they're following orders. They don't want to be there when the mosquitoes are out or when it's really cold. And, you know, some of them are very impressed by our dedication and our resilience in keeping up the settlement, and I think it's going to keep going.
What about the diplomatic side of things, as in, you know, do you have diplomatic relationships?
We do. We do, and we've been working on that. And in the time when we haven't been able to access the territory, we did. We sent delegations to a number of countries in Central America, and the Caribbean, and now South America, and in Europe as well. So we have reached out and met with a number of governments. El Salvador has been very friendly to us. We sent a delegation there. We actually made a one Bitcoin donation to the Children's Hospital in El Salvador. And the President Bukele thanked us personally for that. And we got to tour the White House, and he gave us a police escort everywhere we went. Got to meet with the Minister of Economy, someone from the a deputy in the Ministry of Foreign Relations. We met with several other officials. Actually, our representative in El Salvador, his cousin, is the ambassador to the United States. So we're pretty friendly with El Salvador, or there's a number of other countries. I won't mention all of them, but we are friendly with Argentina.
What does that mean? Like, I know nothing about international relations. Mm-hmm. Is there an official stamp that you can get with regards to diplomacy, or is it just a letter of intention? Yeah, we kind of like what you're doing.
What we do is we suggest that our proposal is usually, here's a memorandum of understanding, which means we'll work together. We pledge in sort of a non-binding way to work together to further relations between the host country and the guest country. So in the case of El Salvador, we proposed, okay, let's work together on, we can bring investors here. We can, but help us out a little in the diplomatic front.
But what does that mean, help you out on the diplomatic front? Do they do anything official? Is there like a worldwide, a way that diplomacy happens? Like,
formal diplomatic recognition entails a number of things. It's, following the Vienna protocols, exchanging letters, setting up rules that govern your diplomats and their diplomats, setting up an embassy, recognizing that this embassy is your soil. That's a little quite involved, and I think that's a little farther down the road for us. We have limited resources, and if we had diplomatic teams like these already established countries do, then we'd be able to engage on that level. Right now it's, mostly formal to moderately formal, informal to moderately formal talks and dialogue with different countries. I think if we had, more resources, we'd be able to approach that in a more systematic way. We've sent out a number of diplomatic letters to other countries saying, look, this is a territory. It's not claimed by any of its neighbors. We're not taking over a territory. We're not a military coup. We're not seceding from any other country. And we would like you to consider establishing relations with us. So it involves extending formal ties, acknowledgments. And that's what we're going for here. And recognition of passports. A few countries have recognized our passport.
Really?
Yeah.
Who's that then?
We're compiling a document that has stamps from all the countries that have accepted our passport. El Salvador agreed to do that when we sent a delegation there.
So you could go to El Salvador on a Libelem passport.
We have done that, and if you were to do that, we would talk to them to make sure we weren't, okay, not throwing them a curveball, as we
said.
What
are the other countries then that you could travel to with a
Libelem passport? We're talking to Argentina about that. Of course, they have a new president, Javier Milei, who's a supporter of Liberland. He said some very kind things about Liberland, and he already knew about us a couple of years ago. And he said he's from Liberland. He's dressed in sort of this costume and sort of one kind of funny appearance that he had once. And he said he came from Liberland. He described it. Oh, 7 kilometers in between Serbia and Croatia, and I'm going to kick the butt of the statists, And so he's in our camp. So, ideally we would, they would recognize our passport. And then we would send people there to investors in. We've had some dialogue about that already.
So other than El Salvador and Argentina, who would you say are your best relationships with?
We have some good, one early relationship which we signed an agreement with, an actual MOU with the president, although the country is not in good shape now, Haiti. And we sent some aid there. And the president signed an agreement with us. But it's a failed state, sadly. The gangs are running the show there. It's really...
Is that how it works in diplomacy then? Is it like... Is it? No, I mean, I'm being cynical here. Is it like, we'll bung you some money and then you say you like it kind of thing? Is
it that helps. It helps.
Is that how it works at high levels as well?
It helps.
Yeah.
It certainly helps. You grease the wheels a little bit. It helps smooth things out, and it's natural. Hmm. It's the natural. You develop relationships. You engage in dialogue, and you begin to exchange thoughts and then commerce and then diplomacy.
And what about in the countries with a democratic system that where the government changes? Does this supersede all that? Does it kind of go above that?
Yeah, because in a lot of times in the foreign ministry or the State Department or foreign affairs or what have you, Secretary of State, they those people are career people. And so no matter who's in the government, whoever they elect, a lot of the same people work in the Foreign Service. So sometimes they're hard. It's a hard nut to crack. Like in the U.S., it's a big bureaucracy in the State Department. It's hard to, you know, sometimes you can meet individual people who will talk to you. But if you try to call them on the phone, you might just get the phone tree and not get anywhere. You have to establish the personal relationships. And that's so important in diplomacy. Vit, our president, met the Croatian president last year, Zoran Milanovic. And they had a wonderful discussion in Zagreb. And we decided to go to the Association of Croatian American Professionals meeting, which was in Zagreb last year. And they got to meet Milanovic. They met the former president, Kolinda. They met, actually, interesting story, the governor of the Osijek area, which borders Liberland, Ivana Nusic, they met with him there. And they said, oh, Liberland, it's in my backyard. Come to my office. We'll talk about it sometime. And he, I don't know if you know the story of Niko Omilana. He's a YouTube guy. He went to Liberland last year. And he had a video that he published. He tried to go. It tells the story beautifully. He came here during the anniversary, and he tried to go to Liberland many different ways. And he tried to go through the border, and then the border again. And he had a reservation for a hotel in Croatia. They still wouldn't let him in. He went to Hungary, got a jet ski from one of his supporters, and they came to Liberland on the jet ski. And the Croatians, they were caught blindsided by that. And the Croatians eventually came, and they roughed him up. And he and his buddy there from the U.K., they you know, made him sit on the ground. They kicked him, and it was kind of funny. It made the Croatians look pretty unprofessional.
Well, I think,
but they couldn't charge him with anything because he didn't break any law.
My observation of that event was that because that video has got millions of views, more than the total population of Croatia watched that video, isn't that the reason why they kind of changed their stance a little bit on allowing people to come in and out?
They changed their stance days after that was published. So that may have played a big role in it. So we're very thankful for Niko and the Niko Defense League.
Well, yeah, but that makes me think that's an important strategy here. Mm-hmm. Because, I see a massive uphill battle, obviously, like I'm sure you all do when you think about the future here. But that seemed to be a really simple and effective way to get some kind of response from Croatia. Because, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, right? This is my observation. Nothing much is going to happen. It's going to be the cat and mouse game indefinitely until something happens between you guys and Croatia. Not so much, you know, the other diplomatic stuff. Is that your idea as well or not?
It could very well play out that way. We don't want to try to do that and do the wrong thing. We don't want to upset relations. We want to have good relations with Croatia. And if we could turn it into something positive, then yes, some standalone event that attracts a lot of attention might do the trick. And they might wisen up to say, hey, maybe we could, you know, have a prosperous and peaceful community on our border. And we would benefit from that. And of course they would. We would hire people from Croatia. We would have maybe a tax agreement with Croatia not to double tax people. Or they would be taxed in Croatia on their earnings in Liberland or something. So we wouldn't, you know, be perceived as a drain on Croatia. Because that area, a lot of people have left. Like, you know, those towns, Majevac has like 800 people. It used to have 1,200 people or 1,500 people a couple of years ago. People are leaving to go to the coast or to go to Germany or to go to the Netherlands or somewhere else where there's work, where there's paying jobs, because there aren't many paying jobs in Osijek Baranja region, the northeast corner of Croatia, which is borders to Liberland. So it may take some high-profile event that attracts a lot of attention to move the needle.
You mentioned earlier that one of your big selling points for Liberland was freedom.
Mm-hmm.
obviously, my initial instant reaction to that is government's probably very scared of that concept. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, is that a good strategy?
The government's, yeah.
If I was Croatia and, I mean, literally, I put myself in their shoes. Some people come claiming we can live a free life here right next to me. It's a bit like NATO appearing next to Russia. You know, it's like there's a certain element of threat there. You know, like it's also another, you know, I mean, not that it matters too much, but an angle that did occur to me was the environmental side of it, as in, it's a beautiful area, as you know, as we went there. It's phenomenal. It's like, it is mm-hmm. like being in the Amazon jungle. I couldn't believe it. But obviously there's going to be a degradation of that environment, obviously.
Yeah.
Not that that is necessarily a bad thing, because there's a huge area. But those are the kind of things that people will pick up on and go, you know, we want to preserve this forest. We don't want a bunch of people going there and just being free and doing whatever they want.
Yeah, I don't want to change the character of the area. I would like to see it retain its charm, its riverine beauty. I don't want to see it turn to all concrete. I would like to see it, maybe something like Ark, and that's one of the purposes of the Ark, would serve as, here's a way we could live with the environment, with the beauty of the, and that's the appeal of the area, because it's so nice, because it's so green and beautiful, and it's right on the river. Ark is a good example how we can see, of course we had to clear a few trees on the other side of the river to fix up the cottages, but we're planting more trees too, and we're planting a farm over there. So we can maintain that, I think, and if we do it wisely, and that's what I'm an advocate of. I think we can live in harmony with that. I mean, some other people might have a different idea, you know, the skyscrapers and the flying cars and stuff. I would like to see something like this. I like quality over quantity. We don't need to be a Hong Kong. We can be, you know, a nice place with, you know, and a prosperous place at the same time. So my point is we can have quality over quantity.
How will that work, though? Because I think probably there's differing opinions in the government about that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, from what I've spoken to Vit a few times, I think Vit's idea is slightly different to that, right? Something a little more futuristic.
Probably. Yeah, it's good to have aspirational goals. My own personal view is I think we can live in harmony with the region and how it is.
But how will that pan out, say? You know, because obviously something that I couldn't help notice about what's going on here is there's not a lot of clarity. And that makes total sense to me. It's a pioneer community mm-hmm. full of individuals, blah, 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 you know. And possibly that might be why it's so difficult to move beyond a certain point into diplomatic relationships, for example. So how do you see that panning out? If because also, you know, if you go to Liberbase, there's definitely a culture at Liberbase, and they are, I would say, are more your culture, low rise wooden buildings, living like that. But then you've, on the other hand, you've got, say, someone like Vit, who's probably thinking about Singapore. There
he goes to Dubai a lot. He's right. Probably influenced by that. Of course, Dubai was a desert, and they built that from
sure.
Not much of anything, and that's fine. I mean, if
but how would that work? Because I'm with you on this. I think, yeah, wooden structures, this kind of thing. We're in a log cabin type place at the moment in the woods. It's lovely, but what if it turned into a, you know, modern skyscrapers? Would that put you off?
Do
you think?
A little bit, but it's the will of the people. I can't really do much about that. I'm not a dictator, you know. And that's the key aspect of freedom. You know, if it's necessary, if it's the demand is there, I think it's fine. Of course, government is the one institution that destroys beautiful nature in many, many cases. And the people have an incentive to make their place nice. Like if you look in the U.S., like you'll notice that in the more affluent neighborhoods, they are nicer. If you fly over Miami, if you fly over, there's some neighborhoods around Curtis Parkway near the airport, beautiful big trees there. And these are very affluent neighborhoods. And if you go over the more low-income areas, it looks like urban hell. you know. So I think with prosperity, with innovation, we can achieve that. I think we can.
Fair enough. One last question then. What do you think is needed to make things progress beyond this point? Like I say, my observations from a week is that it's kind of like a stalemate in a way. You know, you can build buildings and they get knocked down. You can build buildings and I can see how important it is to have settlers there all the time because it sets a precedent. But really, the jump in progress that would happen if, for example, Croatia said, yeah, you can drive vehicles in there, we're cool with that now, would be just, you know, you would have 10 years worth of what you're doing now would happen, and in 6 months it would all happen, you know. So what do you think? What's needed?
What is needed is to reach Croatian decision makers on a higher level. We need to make the case that we can be a benefit for Croatia. We can, I think in Serbia, we have an example where we've brought a lot of tourists. We've had a lot of conferences, brought a lot of business to the hotels, to the restaurant industry, to the maritime industry. We could do the same in Croatia if they played ball with us. And I think we can make it a win-win situation. We just need to reach the people making the decisions. I've tried to find out who is making the decision to make it tough for Liberlanders. And the police say, well, we're following orders. So discussing that with the policeman may not bring too much. It might get a reading on how they feel, but they are getting orders. And people have told me, well, they're getting orders from Zagreb. So we need to reach people who make decisions on the country level in Croatia and convince them that they can benefit from it too. We've had advisors in Zagreb who tell us, well, they don't want to hear that. They don't want to hear win-win. They want to hear we win, and that's it. We don't care about anything else. So we want to, they'll take some more convincing, but I think we have some strong arguments. Like we've got a great design for a hotel, a green-style hotel in Liberland, and who wouldn't want that? A nice luxury hotel right there. It would bring a lot of employment, it would bring a lot of investment, it would bring a lot of positive attention to the area, which has suffered from exodus, being economically moribund for a couple decades now, and it would revive an area which needs it.
I suppose who wouldn't want it? Yes, you Liberland would, but I still look at Croatia. I put myself in their position and go, mm-hmm. Hell no, I don't want someone. I want to build a hotel
there.
Yeah,
exactly.
Which it does make sense to me. And I think probably nothing's going to happen until the border dispute is resolved as well. Because that, if I was in government, I would say, well, look, we don't even have to think about this until we realize we haven't secured the land on the other side of the river or something. Because otherwise, so how does this ever?
That looks like it's getting even pushed to even farther in the future, because with the East and West, and Serbia is more aligned with the East a little bit, that's going to delay. They want to join the EU, of course, and that's going to delay that quite a bit. So the border dispute being resolved, we don't see it happening anytime soon. And we've asked the EU, we put a question to the European Commission, is Gornja Siga in the EU or outside the EU? And at the time they said, well, you know, that's will be resolved in the future. We didn't think they'd give us a specific answer. So,
can you not demand a specific answer? Because you could, couldn't you, presumably? There's always some bureaucrat whose job it is to answer that question. Because the answer would be no right now.
Right,
it would
exactly.
100% be no.
And if you look at any Croatian state map, whether it's the official maps or the geodetic administration or any other, the Hrvatska Šuma or the forestry or the Department of Agriculture, if you look on any of their maps, Croatia does not include Liberland. It never was part of Croatia. It was part of Hungary at one point, and then it was part of Serbia. And during Yugoslavian times, it was part of the Republic, Socialist Republic of Serbia within the Yugoslavian Federation. So we need to take it to a higher level. I think we can do that. You know, some more resources would help us out. You know, certainly we'd hire some lobbyists that would help us out in Croatia and making the case for how Liberland could benefit them.
Yeah, I just I see literally the floodgates opening if something happened positively between Croatia and yourselves, because I can imagine even you'll only ever attract a certain type of settler with, mm-hmm. for example, that much police presence. Mm-hmm. You know, even for us, you know, it was a real hassle. You know, three times a day, getting this, getting that, you know. And had I not have really wanted to go to Liberland, I would have been put off on day one when they sort of arrested, in inverted commas, when they arrested me and said, you can't go back. You know, most people at that point would probably say, cool. I just said, why? That's all. Because I knew I wanted to go back and I couldn't see a reason why I wasn't going to be allowed. And of course, they did cave in, you know, in the end. But the smoke and mirrors is a really big factor in all this, I think.
That will put off some people. Some younger Croatians tried to visit Liberland, and I heard that the police told them, well, you can't go there. If you go there, your passport will be taken away and you can't travel anywhere, or you'll be arrested and you'll have that on your record if you try to go. Of course, that's not true. They can visit. Anybody, any Croatian can visit Liberland. But the police were kind of intimidating them not to even try. So we need to reach people on a higher level. We need to show them they can benefit. And maybe we need to make a concession or two to them that they, you know, to make it more concrete.
Would there ever be any thoughts of it being a state in Croatia or something?
It could be a free economic zone in Croatia. Like, say the border dispute was settled tomorrow. Okay, the river is now the border. Okay, here's Liberland. How do we integrate that into Croatia? Interesting, when the UN occupied Croatia in the 90s, part of that area was Serbian, ethnically Serbian. So it took a couple of years to integrate that area into the framework of Croatia with all the districts and everything and the constitution and representation. And that area decidedly did not include Liberland, although they could have included it. But no, that's still Serbia. That process may happen after a border dispute is resolved, and we could be a free zone within Croatia. So
you're not against that idea?
If it came to that, we could work with that. Hmm. Yeah, we could be a free city in Croatia.
Free zones. Free cities are free zones, pretty much. When you actually look at the evolution of special economic zones, that's what a free city is. Mm-hmm. It's a special economic zone with people living there. And that's what that's what's happening in Honduras now, at Prospera. That's mm-hmm. literally what's happening, you know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I'm always trying to see how this thing might come to fruition, because I think it's really interesting predicament that you find yourselves in. Are you optimistic yourself?
Yes. Oh, yes. I'm an eternal optimist. And if I didn't think it had promise, it would be difficult to be involved, but I think it definitely does.
What do you think your biggest hurdle is at the moment then, and be honest, you know, is it morale? Is it money? Is it like the bullshit police or whatever? I don't know.
A combination of all those things, but resources would definitely help us. It would help us weather the storms, whether it's with the police or the weather or what have you. It would help us do outreach a little better. It would help us attract the people we want to be productive members of the Liberland community. I think we can, with Croatia, when it comes to Croatia, I think if we present ourselves as a community and not try to force them to accept the idea of us as a state, you know, I think it'd be an easier buy-in. You know, we're a community of people. Whether we're a part of Croatia or not is not the point. We want to be a community right here. We want to bring benefits. And you know, whether that's we have to go through Croatian channels to do that, to establish our community, then that's fine. And we are kind of doing that, you know.
If it was considered as Croatia's land, is it state owned? Would it be state owned?
It was previously privately. Private owners owned plots of land in Gornja Siga, as when it was part of Serbia. Serbian government compensated the former owner, saying, "Hey, you might lose this land at some point. So here's €1,000 for your plot of land over in Gornja Siga." So that's all.
So currently, it So, but it would belong to the state if it was.
It may revert to the state, bona vacantia. Bona vacantia is basically abandoned property, and that reverts to the crown or the state. But they don't. In Croatia's case, they don't claim it. So why would it revert to them? So, but it would. It would be the state. But who's the state? And we feel that we are the state since we claimed it in 2015.
All right. So, what's the next thing to be done, according to you? And then we'll wrap it up.
Well, work on the diplomacy. Work on reaching decision makers in Croatia. Work on reaching people in Europe as well, because Europe is definitely involved in the Balkans. Whether it's from a security aspect, whether it's from promoting democracy, I put that in quotes. Whether it's in promoting civil society, we're going to have to work together with them. We're not going to join the EU. Nor do we want to, but we're going to have to work with them. No two ways about it.
Fair enough. Well, Thomas, thanks for speaking today.
It's been sure, enlightening. Tim. I enjoyed speaking with you.
And me too. And good luck. And yeah, it's a uphill struggle, I'm almost certain. And I think time will tell. But my feeling and my intuition is, it will happen, but it might be 100 years. I have no idea on the timescale, but I feel it will happen.
Borders change all the time here, and within our lifetimes, the borders have changed. So, and within our parents' and grandparents' lifetimes, they changed even more.
Amen to that. And thanks for coming in, and thanks for talking to us.
My pleasure. Anytime.